Hotline, Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heat, and Cooling and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Happy Monday, Willie Donick, Derek Mason. How are we doing?
Hey.
Doing great.
It's a good Monday.
It's great Monday. It's hot, steamy.
It is humid. It's a beautiful day, and it is great to be alive.
Absolutely.
Reporter Nick is here as well. Nick Kieser, how we doing?
I'm doing well. Derek, it would be welcome to the jungle because it's so humid outside.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Tennessee thing. It's starting to get a little steamy. You do that morning workout. You don't stop sweating for the next hour.
But you have to do it in the morning.
That's why you got to do it early in the morning. But I'm going to do mine later this afternoon.
Okay. Grind don't stop, D-Mays.
Grind don't stop, Willie. You know that.
That's right. You got to keep going. Keep grinding.
And the grind was on for the Titans rookies this past weekend as they were out at rookie minicamp. And one thing that I just want to remind everybody.
Please remind them, please.
Day one of rookie minicamp.
Yes.
Nobody is a Pro Bowler on day one of rookie minicamp. Nobody is a bust on day one of rookie minicamp. Nobody was a bad draft choice on day one of rookie minicamp. Nor is anybody coming for anyone's job quite yet on day one of rookie minicamp. Just a reminder that the clips that you saw on Twitter or the articles that you are reading, however exciting or, you know, just damning as they might seem just after day one, remember, it is just one day. A lot is going to change.
Boy, I'm really glad that you're saying this, because if you didn't say it, I'd be the one to say it. Because
yes.
It's pump your brakes.
But you know what's coming. It's going to be like this every day.
Absolutely.
Every day in the offseason. A guy has a good practice, a mini camp. It really doesn't mean a whole lot. And what really fascinates me is, most of the time, most of us whose job it is to keep up with the team, we don't remember who really did well in all the practices and the training camps and the mini camps and the OTAs. We can't keep it all straight. Like, there's a couple of themes that stick in your mind, like last year, the Treylon Burks, why couldn't he stay on the field? You know, that was a that was a legit story, right, that we remember. I do remember A.J. Brown tearing it up in the first rookie mini camp, and people were saying, looks like they might have something here. And they were right. But other than a story here and a story there, I can't tell you how many times over the 20-something years I've been doing this, when you hear a story about a guy in the off-season somewhere where he just turns out to be completely insignificant when the season starts.
Every year
it could go any number of ways.
Yeah, it can. The rookie minicamps, and I'm going to tell you what it's for. And what typically happens at rookie minicamp. The coaches, you know, you bring, and obviously it's a little bit different now than obviously when I came in as a rookie in 97. What you want to learn as a coaching staff, one, who's in condition? Who's been taking care of their bodies? Because they're going to hit the ground running. Who can absorb the playbook? Because there's no veterans around, you know, you're going to get the reps. You don't feel intimidated because, you walk in and you see Derrick Henry, or you walk in and see Ryan Tannehill, Jeffrey Simmons, or Kevin Byer. You know, for me, it was, I didn't walk in seeing Eddie George and Steve McNair and Brad Hopkins and Blaine Bishop, you know, or Bruce Matthews. So we all walked in together as rookies. Or guys trying to make the team, you know, undrafted rookies. So we all, you know, I'm not going to say there was a familiarity with the guys, but there was a sense of we're all on the same level. You know, we're all rookies. We're all coming in here trying to work to gain the respect and try to get better as players. And that's what these guys are walking into. No veterans. Just a bunch of rookies and undrafted guys. We're all on the same plane. We're all working to get better. Now, you have your draft picks, and then you have your undrafted guys. That's a different level, but still, we're all here together trying to work on this. So who's in condition? Who can absorb the playbook? And, you know, just how can we form this bond as quickly as possible? Some guys are trying to win jobs. And we saw the Titans signed a undrafted rookie that was there for a tryout, a cornerback. he impressed the team so good that he impressed the team so well that they gave him a contract. So that's what this first day, this rookie minicamp is about, absorbing the playbook, making sure you're in condition, getting a feel of what it's going to be like when the veterans get here. Because once the veterans get here, it's going to ramp up a little bit more. And those reps that you were getting as a rookie, you're not getting them anymore. Mm-hmm. So you got to try to get as many as you possibly can. And it's just a building block. Yes, you want to come in and put your best foot forward as far as, you know, making all the catches, making all the throws. But you understand that a lot of this you're doing without pads anyway. A lot of this you're doing against air. So you want to you just want to try to go in there and put your best foot forward. And from what I've seen, you know, and you got to be careful about the clips that are being put out, because they are being put out in a certain in a way to make everything look great. Like everything, like if I was just to look at the clip, I would say Will Levis need to be starting today, like today. He looked good on the clips.
He did.
And I'm not sitting here saying he didn't look good the whole, you know, the mini camp, but I'm sure he had his moments where he did look like the second round pick, you know? So let's just be careful on how we approach this and how we look at this from the outside looking in. Don't make too big a deal about a guy maybe performing well or not performing well. Let's just go in it. And then once the veterans come, we'll start to really see guys will start to separate themselves. So, but it's a good step forward for the Tennessee Titans. They understand what they got, and they just want to make sure they're not setting their season based upon what they've seen today, you know, during the weekend. They're not.
And I'm glad you bring that up, because although it is just day one, mm-hmm. and although every single year we have training camp darlings of players that just stand out and look great, and they're the number that we all circle at the end of practice and say, man, that guy looked good. I think Gracie McMath was that one year. I can't think of that off the top of my head, but every single year you have your training camp darlings. So while we can't, and those players usually or sometimes, more often than not, may end up being practice squad guys or guys that aren't able to contribute to this football team. So while we can't take too much away from it, it's not nothing. We start to get a glimpse behind the curtain of what guys, to your point, Derek, came in football shape. Because it was not a good start to Treylon Burks' career this past season that he showed up to rookie minicamp not in football shape. And you could point to a million different things. You know, we talked about allergies. We talked about asthma. Whatever it was, when you're a first-round draft pick and you show up and you're not ready to go, that's a problem. That's a storyline. And it's something that continued throughout training camp. So once you start to see some of these rookies get off on the right foot, they start looking positive. They show up and they have a good grasp of the playbook, mm-hmm. when they show up and they look ready to work, those are all things that matter. Those are all things that can carry into training camp. You know, Colton Dowell, he tripped up on a route, fell over in rookie minicamp. I'm not going to marinate on that.
It happens to even veteran guys.
It happens all the mm-hmm. time. Those are things that, hey, can you get up? Can you learn from it? And he talked to the media about it. He said, hey, look, I'd be lying if I said that's the first time that's ever happened to me. But I had a conversation with Mike Vrabel about it, and I'm going to learn from it. Those are all things that I think are important to take away from rookie minicamp. It's not everything, but also it's not nothing either.
Mm-hmm. I would advise any rookie coming in, and especially Titan rookies, whatever you were doing prior to the draft and coming here and going through this minicamp, throw all that away. Throw it away. Just get rid of it, because what you were doing is you were doing a lot to prepare for a draft. I mean, prepare for the draft. So all these combine things you were doing and short, you know, shuttle things and all these things you were doing to try to make your scores better, whether the 40 time, three cone drill, you know, bench press, vertical, broad, all that. Throw that out of the window. Work on being in condition when you come into camp. Work on being in condition when you come into camp. I'm going to say it one more time. Work on being in condition when you come into camp, because two things are going to happen. One, they're not going to stop for you if you're not in shape. Two, if you're not first round, second round guy, maybe third round guy, they're going to leave your ass behind. They're not going to ask no questions. They're not going to. The only reason why they stuck with Traylon because he was a first round pick. If Traylon came in out of shape and he was a fifth or sixth round pick, you think we'd have heard anything about this?
No.
No, we wouldn't have. So, guys, make sure when you come into camp on this second go around, when you come back for the big camp, make sure you're in shape. Be in shape. Make sure you can go through a NFL practice because it's nothing like a college practice. It's faster. It's harder. It's nothing like a college practice. So make sure, please make sure you're in shape. That's the one thing above any other thing. Make sure you're in shape because if you're not in shape, all that other stuff you want is not going to come. And maybe you're not going to get the opportunity to get yourself in shape like Traylon did. They're not going to give you that excuse. If you're not a first or a second round pick, especially if you're an undrafted guy and you come in and you ain't in shape, you might as well walk back home. Come in shape and be ready to go. Everything else will take care of itself. Your learning curve, all that other stuff, it will take care of itself. But if you don't come in shape, you don't even give yourself a chance.
Fair point. Very well put. And coming up next, I want to get into the focal point of rookie minicamp, really the focal point of ever since he was drafted. Our first impressions of Will Levis, the first time we've seen him in a Titans uniform, and his mindset coming into rookie minicamp, coming into OTAs and training camp. We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, DeMays, 1025-1063, The Game.
Interesting Will Levis video over the weekend, him slinging that thing around with no pass rush and no pads and all that stuff. And some people comparing his release to Aaron Rodgers. Your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as long as he's not doing any darkness retreats, they can compare it to whatever they want. There's a reason that before the season, he was touted as possibly the top pick of the draft. I mean, he looks the part. He's huge. He looks the part. You know, you just see him flick his wrist and the ball comes whistling out of there. So he absolutely looks the part. There have been a lot of guys at that position who have looked the part and absolutely been terrible. What's going to separate him is his ability to learn, to lead, to process, and respond. And, you know, he's got the goods, you know, to deliver if he can do all those things. And those are the things that we're going to have to find out that if he can do. If he can do those things, he's got the physical makeup, that's evident, to be successful.
That was Corey Curtis on Robbie and Rextro this morning. The Titans rookies were out at rookie minicamp over the weekend. And just a reminder to everybody, it's just one day. It is just one practice. It was their first time out there. In a Titans uniform, there's a whole lot that's going to change. There are a whole lot of players that are going to grow and develop from now until training camp starts, from now until preseason, from now until the beginning of the season. But it's not nothing, and we can still take stuff away, not just from, you know, Tajay Spears, not just from Colton Dowell, but looking at Will Levis as well. Because as soon as the Titans drafted Will Levis, we knew that all eyes were going to be on Will Levis. All eyes were going to be on the quarterback position because that's just the nature of the quarterback position. What were our first takeaways, first impressions of Will Levis on day one of rookie minicamp?
I think he came in as expected. I think he came in ready, as he should have been. Because he understands at that position, you got to come in with the mind, with the thought of this is my team. And I'm not saying that to say, well, he's sort of forgetting about Ryan Tannehill. No, this is my team, meaning rookie guys that he's coming in with. This is my group. These are my guys. So I got to come in with that leadership. I got to come in ready. It seems like he's absorbing the playbook, which I don't think anybody thought he wouldn't. He came from one system and played in another system and was able to absorb that playbook just like that. That's why we look at, you know, it's no surprise that Jalen Hurts is playing the way he played. He went from one playbook to another playbook and excelled and didn't miss a beat. So then he gets in Philly and it happens over again and he excels. You look at Will Levis. He goes from Penn State to Kentucky. He picks up on a playbook, he excels. He comes here, sort of the same playbook in a sense, and it seems like he's grasping it. He's come in with that thought of, this is my group. I have to be the leader. I need to take charge. And it just seems like he's ready to take on whatever's thrown at him. Now, he's going to have his growing pains. It's going to be that way. But I think he understands that he has to come in with this thought of, you know, I got to be prepared. I have to be ready, because anything can happen. You know, Ryan Tannehill could get traded. Ryan Tannehill could get injured. Anything can happen. Mm-hmm. He has to be ready. And I believe that's what he's coming in. He wants to learn. He wants to absorb the playbook. But he also understands that he has to be a leader as well. And this is nothing new to him. I mean, if you listen to what they said about him and when he transferred to Kentucky, like, guys, after a while, guys was like, he needs to be the starter. He's the captain. We see it in him. And I'm sure they see sort of the same traits in him the last couple of days. But, again, it's going to take a lot. We got a lot more days ahead of us. You just hope that he grows continually in that process.
Yeah, I'd be lying to you if I, you know, think I have any new, you know, epiphanies about him after one day. I wasn't at the practice. One thing that did catch my attention was the way he conducted himself. I'm watching to see how he conducts himself in the different interviews and press conferences, things like that. He does seem, you know, just trying to match up with what we heard about him before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, he does seem very eager to answer the questions and give you details. And I wonder how that will be as he matures and does this several hundred times, you know, like most pros do, right? It's different in the NFL as opposed to where he's been before. You know, I'm sure there's an enthusiasm right now, like, ooh, the media wants to talk to me. This is exciting. I'll tell them about the first practice. You know, it's just, after a while, I mean, these veterans are like, oh, man, some people dread it. Some people say, okay, I'm going in on Wednesday. I'm doing my thing. It's a routine, right? You got to find your niche, your comfort level. So that's the kind of thing I'm looking for, just little things. I mean, there's no question it was an eye-popping throw that everybody saw probably on their feed, you know, the rollout and the, you know, the sidearm throw that was right on the money. But you can't get too up or down about things like that. If he had thrown five interceptions, you know, I wouldn't really worry about it right now. So it's just a steady thing. I'm looking for how he conducts himself as much as anything else. That's just because I can't tell you what's going on in the practice, what's supposed to be happening, things like that. That would be an overreaction for me if I were trying to analyze what's happening there.
And I think that's a fair point, because the kind of person that he is, the kind of preparer, the kind of leader, that's what's going to carry into this season, into next season, and into the entirety of his NFL career. Who he is as a quarterback right now, today, is not going to be the same as the quarterback that he is next week, next month, next year. And I think that you can be encouraged by the really nice throw, you know, right on the sideline, right on the money. You can be encouraged by that. But remember, that was against no pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
If Will Levis did throw six interceptions, you could be discouraged by that, but also understanding that, hey, he's got a lot of learning to do. He's got a lot of growth. So you can be encouraged and discouraged, but also remember that there are a lot of things that are going to change. There are a lot of factors that are going to be there in an NFL game that weren't there in practice, like a pass rush or, you know, whatever it might be. But I think that the mindset is the most important thing. And D-Mace, you mentioned what I think is incredibly important for any young player coming into this team, but especially the quarterback. The mindset of, this is my team. And Will Levis was asked on Saturday after rookie minicamp practice what his mindset really is coming into the season. This was Will Levis.
When you look at the big picture, are you going into this with the mindset that you're competing to be the starter? How do you approach this?
I approach this to just get better every day. Just get here and learn. I haven't even touch the tip of the iceberg of what's to be needed to know here as a quarterback. Regardless of how today and yesterday went, I got to just keep improving every day, putting the past behind me, learning from my mistakes, and just continuing to just get better and be the best leader I can be and the best person for this team to help us win as many games as we can.
See, that was a smart answer, I think.
The right answer.
And to a question where I think had he given the wrong answer, we'd have hours of talk about why he said this or that, right? But that was the only answer to give. So that was smart, right? And that's where I'm looking, right, is how does he handle the stages of development? Mm-hmm. When you're the quarterback and you are a guy drafted, everybody's hopeful, you're the future, he's going to be under the microscope. And so those are the lessons that you don't want to fall into any traps unnecessarily, because that only distracts what really is important, keeping mm-hmm. your head down, the stuff that he said, learning the playbook, taking it day by day, make the steady improvement, win over your peers, your coaches, your teammates, be a good teammate. I mean, all of the rest of the stuff will take care of itself.
Yeah, it will. But, I mean, he understands. Because, listen, he's been through this scenario three times. Typically, a guy only goes through this scenario twice. When he first comes in as a college freshman, and then if he's blessed enough, he gets drafted, then that's the second time where he's coming in and everything is sort of fresh and you don't have no – it's like you have nothing to sort of compare it to. Well, this is the third time for him, you know, coming in as a college freshman and then transferring to Penn State and now, you know, him being a rookie at rookie minicamp. So he's been through this sort of scenario three times. So – In being in it, I think it's almost that adage, being comfortable in an uncomfortable environment.
Yeah.
Well, this is an uncomfortable environment for a lot of these rookies, mm-hmm. but he has a leg up because he's been in this before. This is the third time for him, so he understands what it's going to take, especially at that position. He understands what it's going to take for him. So, you know, this being an uncomfortable position for him, he's comfortable in it, so he can go out and perform the way he know he can perform, because this is not anything new to him. He's been in these situations before where he had to learn a new playbook, where everything was new, where there was this high expectation of you. Well, this kid's been through it, so he's aware of what's happening. He knows the talking points. He know what he can say, what he can't say. And he's just, like you said, I'm just going to continue to grind. But even in grinding and in the back of your mind, you have goals that you set.
Yeah.
You may not verbally say them.
Exactly.
But you have goals in your mind. When I got drafted, my goal was to come in there and prove to them that they should have drafted me earlier. And then once I established that, to become a starter in this league. And then to become a Pro Bowler, all pro. All that stuff. So you have these things in the back of your mind, but you can't verbally say them because then it comes off a certain way. He has these goals in mind that he wants to be the starter day one. Who doesn't? But he would never say that.
He's not going to get up there and
exactly.
say, Ryan, I'm coming
exactly.
for you.
But he
I'm
know,
taking your
but
job.
But Ryan knows he is.
Ryan knows he
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Everybody in the world knows he is.
Right.
But, you know, he's coming off how he's supposed to.
And if it works well, it creates a healthy competition.
Exactly.
Right? Ryan Tannehill's got a little chip on his shoulder. I'll show you I can still play this game. Mm-hmm. We draft another quarterback. You know, all of these things that all players use to motivate themselves. But hopefully, when everybody gets in there, you have your internal goals, your personal goals, but also you have what's best for the team and being a good teammate mm-hmm. and everybody working towards the same thing. That's the balance. It doesn't always happen. It was a great thing I saw Pat Riley talking about with the Miami Heat and how they're sort of a bunch of underdogs, right? And how are they doing this? They're sort of overachieving. He talked about these philosophies that they have. It's called the disease of me, but all these things that if you read the 6 points, I was really interested in that, like trying to put your personal stuff aside when you get in there and work for the group.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said it before, and I'll say it a million times again. I think the competition between Ryan Tannehill and Will Levis is the best possible thing for this football team.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ryan Tannehill is going to be motivated by it. Because Will Levis is going to be motivated by it. And you've got two quarterbacks that are competing against one another, that are being motivated by one another. How could that possibly be a bad thing for this team? Coming up next, I think there's become a new prototype or a new, you know, spokesperson for being the quarterback not drafted in the first round. How does Will Levis stack up? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
What did it mean to you that Brock reportedly scored the best of all the quarterbacks last year, and then you saw in San Francisco how he processed the game as a rookie?
again, I'm hearing that Brock is, it doesn't surprise me, but I think more than anything, you have to know the human that Brock is, right? Like, Brock knew that he wasn't the tallest, the fastest, or had the strongest arm, but I legitimately saw this kid prepare every game. You know, as you know, you hear it all the time, you know, you hear guys say, I'm preparing as if I'm going to be the starter, right? I saw him do that. His seat was right across the row from mine. So whether he was inactive or active on our flights to away games, he put in the work. So I don't know if the S2 picks that up, you know, but I saw the work and the type of human he was that I think supersedes any type of cognitive testing.
That was Rand Carthon in the pre-draft press conference. And you're probably thinking to yourself, Caroline, why do I care about Brock Purdy? Why do I care about what Rand Carthon has to say about Brock Purdy? Well, I think that there's a really solid argument that Brock Purdy in his rookie season was the most successful quarterback out of that quarterback class. He's kind of become the prototype of that non-first round, not really considered elite quarterback and what they can do at the next level. So I thought it was interesting listening to the rookies, listening to Mike Vrabel over the weekend, kind of what they had to say about the development, what they had to say about some of the relationships that they were building between some of the rookies. And there was something that I heard that really reminded me of that one clip of Rand Carthon that sparked something in me that thought, huh, that reminds me of what I heard from Rand Carthon, what he admires so much about Brock Purdy, why he thought Brock Purdy was able to be so successful at the next level, even being a seventh-round pick. But Colton Dowell, seventh-round wide receiver out of UT Martin, took to the podium and talked about his experiences so far, what he has learned about Will Levis. This was Colton Dowell.
Will's a great dude. I'm actually rooming with him in the hotel, and I'm kind of scared to touch the remote because he was the first one in there, and he was looking at his iPad and he was studying plays, and our remote hasn't moved. So he's a very intense guy, and you know, he really wants to make the most out of this opportunity he's been given. The first night we were in the hotel was me, him, and Josh Wiley, the tight end. We were up there going through plays. If we had questions, we'd ask him, and you know, just kind of back and forth banter over the playbook and everything.
Now, I don't think the reason why Brock Purdy was so successful this past season is only because he had his head in a playbook. And there's a lot that has to do with his natural talent, and there's a lot to do with the talent around him, and a lot has to do with being in that Shanahan kind of style offense. I don't think that Will Levis, because he has been preparing, because he had his face in an iPad studying the playbook, that he's going to become Brock Purdy or even better than Brock Purdy in his rookie season. But there are little things like that. When we talk about mindset, when we talk about the person that these players are, the leaders that they are, that is encouraging to me that Will Levis has kind of been that leader that has rallied the rookies around and said, hey, I'll help you with the playbook. I'm not watching TV. I'm looking at the playbook. It's at least encouraging.
Yeah, I think we'd be surprised. People would be surprised sometimes how obvious that seems, that that's what you should be doing, but how many people really don't get it until it's too late. But, I mean, it does uncover an essential question of life, though, is when you're rooming with somebody, how do you know who to grab the remote? I mean, I've been in that dilemma. You've been there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Caroline, I'm sure you've been there,
right?
So I
don't like rooming,
right?
With people.
I mean, sometimes you're uneasy. Like, I remember I was a freshman. I was rooming with the senior, our captain, Eric Reed, great guy. I had deferred to Big E. Uh-huh. Big E was taking the remote. Okay, I was fine with that.
What you want to watch, Big E?
Yeah, and Big E was awesome. He had the video thing set up. Like, we used to at Vanderbilt, we had to stay in the Holiday Inn for because they kicked us out of the dorms for Thanksgiving break, Christmas break. So we spent a lot of time in the hotels. So we had the roommate, and so you know, the hotel remote. You got extra channels in the hotel, right? So it was big. What were we going to watch? But Big E had it all set. Eric was he had the scheme where he had all the VHS tape machines. He could tape the movies off of the thing somehow.
Throwback.
The statute of limitation is gone here.
Exactly.
I'm not sure it was all legal, but we had the best movies in our room. It was great. So he had it all taken care of. But that is, I mean, you're meeting people, you're getting to know your teammates. That's important, right? Building that little camaraderie, and people are going to look to the quarterback for that. You know.
Yeah, it's. You got to understand why it wasn't a coincidence that they put those two guys together, or those three guys, because they're offensive guys,
right.
And they're going to be, if you're looking toward the future, whether you know they're going to make the team or not, you want to make sure you pair all of those guys together, because essentially, you know, one helps the other, and this one is an extension of the other. The tight end, the receiver, and the quarterback, they all work together. So they all got to be seeing the field the same way. So them being in a room with Will Levis is great, because now I get to pick his brain on what he wants to see, how he's looking at it, how he interprets it. And then he gets to sort of, you know, sit back and listen to how I sort of interpret it and how I visualize it and what I like. If I like that slant, you know, I may come flat or I may come up high. It just depends. So you get to work back and forth mentally on that. Then when you get out there physically, you know exactly what he's looking for as a receiver. You look at your quarterback, you know exactly what he's thinking, know exactly what he's looking for. And I've told you guys the story, guys and girls, the story of me and my rookie camp. It was like, listen,
who was your roommate? And did you grab the remote?
No, it was Joey and Joey Ken and someone else, or is it just Joey and I? But it was two levels to it, to the hotel or hotel room or apartment, whatever it was. Stay. It was two levels. And I remember one night they were going to get something to eat, you know, going out. And my thing was, no, I'm good. I'm just going to stand here. My whole thing was, before I got there, my brother said, listen, it's not where you were picked. It's what you do when you get there. So make sure that you stay in your playbook. My oldest brother, my second oldest brother, make sure you stay, learn everything you need to possibly learn, because that only helps you once you get out on the field. And I remember Les Steckel said, you got to learn the X and the H, which is the inside receiver, and the Z. And I'm thinking, like, why do I got to learn all three of these positions? Like, man, I wasn't the second rounder. I wasn't your first wide receiver taken. I was in the fourth round. But he saw something that I could learn it, that it wouldn't be a problem. Mm-hmm. So I made sure I stayed in my room and I looked at that playbook. Like, that was my – I was only there to play football. I wasn't there to do anything else.
No Tecmo Bowl?
No, nothing. I was there to play football and learn that playbook. So that's great what they're doing and how they're doing it, because essentially, you know, your ability to play the game is only going to get you so far. If you don't know this, they're going to find it out quickly. So that's half the battle, knowing the information when you go out there on the field. And then you're allowed to let your athletic abilities take over. If you don't know it and there's some hesitancy in it, your athletic ability is not going to be able to take over. So it's good. I'm not surprised that Will's always in a playbook. He needs to be in a playbook. But he's used to, again, I go back, he's used to this. This is something that's not unfamiliar to him.
And when you think about, you know, going into the draft process, what Rand Carthon told us, some of the traits that he values in quarterbacks and players, the preparation and the attention to detail, things like that, things that he admired so much about Brock Purdy, seeing those, you know, those traits start to come to fruition in Will Levis, or at least we are starting to see that as Will Levis enters this next level of football. It makes sense. You see the connection there.
Two types of people, and I'm going to keep on saying it. Y'all know what those two type of people are. It's what the league can do for me or what I can do for the league. The guys that last the longest, barring injury, are the guys that think, what can I do for this league? Not, what can this league do for me? The league is going to do for you what you do for it. It's going to give you what you put in. So if you're putting in half-ass stuff, the league is going to give it back. That's what the league is going to give it back. But if you're putting it all in, then a league is going to give you all of it back.
I hope some rookies are listening now, because D-Mace is speaking some truth. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. A couple aspects of ESPN's Sunday night programming that made me think, what in the world are you doing? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Ridley, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. Hey, join 1025 and 1063 The Game this Friday for the grand opening of the new Dunkin' in Spring Hill, located at 2098 Wall Street. Stop by and grab some coffee and register for giveaways from 7 to 9 a.m. That'll be a blast. I know it will. So last night, ESPN made some programming decisions that I didn't necessarily agree with. I had some questions about, because Edmonton and Vegas, the Oilers and the Golden Knights, were entering a Game 6. Edmonton was looking at potential elimination. And they and keep in mind, Edmonton has two superstars in the sport in Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. And Predators fans know more than anyone just how freaking good those two players are. And I think anybody who's watched a lick of hockey who has eyes can tell just how good those two players are, why they're superstars in the league. And ESPN made the decision to play that game at 10 p.m. Eastern on a Sunday night. And, Willie, you brought up a very fair point about the double-edged sword of getting into bed with ESPN and that network and the NHL and kind of what they're facing right now with ESPN.
Yeah, I remember the days when the league severed ties with ESPN and they decided to go with, at the time, it wasn't even called NBC Sports Network. It was called like OL. It was called some different things. It was OLN, the Outdoor Life Network, and then it was called Versus. For a while, then it became NBC Sports, which is a much better branded name. But when they did that, everybody was saying, well, why would you get rid of ESPN? You need ESPN. ESPN is the main thing. And the league was like, well, we're going to get more. We're going to be the cat daddy on this new channel. We're going to be the main programming. And so there's good and there's bad with that. And then over the years, people were like, you got to get back on ESPN. Getting back on ESPN would be good. Well, now you have it. But this is what happens. Yesterday, you had a Game 7 on ABC, which is in the ESPN family, right? Celtics Sixers. That's going to take center stage. Then you had Sunday Night Baseball, which is a fixture on ESPN. And then only after Sunday Night Baseball do you have the window for the hockey. So from ESPN, look, they got the rights. They paid the money. Perfect triple header for them. They get great programming all day long on their family. And one is not up against the other. So that's their right to do that. But that's what you get with ESPN. If that were on another partner, it probably would have been at a different time, for sure. But this is the up and down. But it was really a shame from the hockey standpoint that you had such superstar players playing in a window where, you know, most of the audience is probably just not going to bother to stay up. I was fighting to stay up to watch it. It was very compelling to see the Oilers go down, right? It's another great story, just the woe is me when you lose, when you put so much into a season, you load up like they did. They traded from Matias Ekholm and some other guys, and they thought they had the team, and they're out in the second round after they made it even further last year. But I guess you take the good with the bad when you partner up with ESPN, and they're not all with ESPN. Remember, TNT does a really good job, I think an excellent job covering hockey. But if I'm the league, I'm going to try to do what I can to see that ESPN puts more effort into it, because you end up being second, third fiddle.
Well, that just shows you and I'm sure they did all their, you know, analysis and data and everything else, but that shows you, and this should be a smack in the face to NHL. It shows you where you are on the pecking order. You know, obviously you were not going to be on at the same time the NBA Game 7, Boston. You're not. That's not going to happen.
You're not competing with Sixers, Celtics.
Exactly. You're not. We're talking about Boston. You know, they're an iconic organization, and Philly is, for that matter, too. So you're not going to be on that space. But why can't you be then the second fiddle to just a regular season baseball game? That's where the NHL need to, like, okay, we understand basketball and football. We understand. I get that. But when we can't even be second to a regular season baseball game,
yeah,
that's a problem.
Well, it's kind of like Sunday night football in the regular season. It's just they have bargained and they have paid for that spot that night. And that's – and when Sunday Night Baseball starts overlapping, right, that happened with Sunday Night Baseball and Sunday Night Football. Like, oh boy, you know. But you try to pay for that slot.
But they
and
can
it's
at least put
there.
It on like ESPN2.
Well, that's
or something.
See, that's what
you know?
People were saying. Now they could have put it on ESPN2. So really, it was a worst case scenario because they had to start the game on ESPN2, and there were three goals scored in the first 5 minutes. It was like right out of the gate, and the Sunday Night Baseball game was a blowout. It was 9-1 the Cardinals. Congratulations to the Cardinals. A little sweep of Fenway Park.
They're starting to show some signs of life here. They're doing it. Yeah. The Cardinals are back, baby. Going to be real obnoxious here coming in the next few weeks.
So the hockey fans were going nuts, right? It's garbage time. It's 9-1. They're just trying to fill the time. They did a split screen. Mm-hmm. Carl Ravitch, who's calling the baseball game, is looking at the hey, they're underway. They're over on ESPN2. And then, oh, my gosh, the score. You know, the first shot of the game went in. Vegas scores on the first play of the game. And so Carl Ravitch is kind of calling the hockey game while he's trying to finish up the baseball game. So hockey fans just did the old eye roll for that. But they could have put it on ESPN2. But if you're ESPN, you would be pitting one against the other, whereas you would have the exclusive, you know, it's the main game going on. If you're just a sports fan and you're watching the top game in each sport, that's what you have the ability to do. On ESPN, you had your window all day. You had basketball, then you had baseball, then you had hockey. So that's the dream for them.
That's like a
but it's
game
stinks for
seven
the audience.
In hockey.
I know
game seven.
It's game six last
game
night.
Six.
But it's an elimination game.
Exactly, it's an elimination game that should take precedence over a regular season game. Just like you know, and I know,
wouldn't say that for football, right? Baseball playoffs, right? World Series, like Fox.
Oh no! I would.
When I was a kid, they put the World Series up against the NFL.
But
regular
if it was
season,
just a
not
regular,
anymore.
But if
they
it was
try
just
not
a,
to do it.
But if it was just a regular season game, just a regular season game, and it was the Game 6 of the World Series elimination game, I would rather have the elimination game on than the football game on. And that's just me, and I don't love baseball.
That's
like
the way
that.
It should be. But there's
but
not
I
enough
know,
baseball.
Exactly.
Baseball is going to lose out to football. In that battle, too, and just like hockey's going to lose out to baseball.
Especially Sunday night baseball.
Yeah.
And that's why I almost don't feel fair criticizing that decision by ESPN because they don't know what else they would have done. To your point, they have a basketball game on ABC, and then Sunday night baseball, that's a fixture of ESPN. I mean, Sunday night baseball and ESPN in the summertime goes together. You know, you just assume that you turn on ESPN on a Sunday night, and baseball is
I wonder what
on.
The
so
viewership
I don't know what the alternative
was.
Is.
I wonder what the viewership of that game was.
I would guess that ESPN would argue, okay, you got two Western teams, right? Edmonton is in the mountains time zone, and I think Vegas is as well. So they probably did fairly well in those markets, and those are the main market, let's be honest, that you're going to get, even though the league would say, hey, you need to be trying to capture the entire audience, not just you know the hardcore, because you don't really have viewers from Edmonton, no matter what, because that's the Canadian audience. That's a whole separate telecast, right? Sportsnet has those games, and so you can't even tune in at Edmonton to the ESPN broadcast. So ESPN has got to try to showcase the superstars in their own way. But I think they sort of figured, hey, you know what? It's not going to be a huge viewership, so let's just put it out west where we're going to have most of the viewers.
And I think it's just another example of really what I think is poor coverage of the NHL by ESPN. Some of the NHL voices that they have, I don't particularly enjoy, nor do I think a whole lot of hockey fans enjoy. It does feel so obviously like, okay, let's just try and put together something to make this seem like a really good broadcast and to make this seem like this is really a priority of ours. But it really, to me, more often than not, seems obvious that ESPN is not placing a whole lot of priority on the NHL, which is fine. The NHL got paid by ESPN. I mean, they got that partnership that they wanted. That's fine. It's just a tough product to watch.
I think if you compare it to the coverage on TNT, the TNT coverage is way, way better. And that's just me as an observer comparing the two. It's a natural thing. You watch games on both. I'm watching the games either way. I love the playoffs. I'm watching. But TNT's product is better. That would bother me if I were ESPN. I would notice that. I think that's a general consensus. I'm not saying, you're not saying, Caroline, anything different than most hockey observers are saying.
Yeah.
I would want to compete if I were more with ESPN, but it doesn't seem like they have that right now. I'd like to see them turn it up.
I would, if ESPN is going to invest in it, if they are going to take ownership of hockey, take ownership of it.
Yeah.
Go all in. Make it better. Make it a better product for the viewers so they're not dreading whenever their team is being played on ESPN. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, a local media member feels re-energized by one aspect of what they saw at rookie minicamp. We'll discuss coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.